And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Today is May 4th, 124th day of the year. 241 days remain until the end of the year. And this morning, throughout the day, I received birthday wishes from a number of folks that have seen my, listened to my show and seen my online post, and I want to thank you all. It's definitely been an interesting birthday. On this day in history, in 1256, the Augustinian monastic orders constituted at the Lesseto Monastery by Pope Alexander IV issued a papal bull, Licet Ecclesiae Catholiae. 1415, religious reformers John Wycliffe and John Hus are condemned as heretics at the Council of Constance. If you don't agree with me, you're going to hell, son, and I'll help you get there. 1436, assassination of the Swedish rebel leader, later national hero, Engelbrektsson. 1471, War of the Roses, the Battle of Tewkesbury. Edward IV defeats a Lancastrian army and kills Edward of Westminster, Prince of Wales. 1493, Pope Alexander VI divides the New World between Spain and Portugal along the line of demarcation. Oh yes, the representative of God decides who gets what. 1626, Dutch explorer Peter Minuit arrives in New Netherland, present-day Manhattan Island, aboard the Seamew. 1686, the municipality of Lagan is founded in the Philippines. 1776, Rhode Island becomes the first American colony to renounce allegiance to King George III. 1799, Fourth Anglo-Mysore War, Battle of Seringapatam. The siege of Seringapatam ends when the city is invaded and Tipu Sultan killed by the besieging British army, which was under the command of General George Harris. 1814, Emperor Napoleon arrives at Porto Ferro on the island of Elba to begin his exile. You know, he was later, it now turns out, murdered to keep him from coming back again. 1814, King Ferdinand VII abolishes the Spanish Constitution of 1812, returns Spain to absolutism. 1836, formation of the Ancient Order of Hibernians. 1859, the Cornwall Railway opens across the Royal Albert Bridge, linking Devon and Cornwall in England. 1869, the naval battle of Hakodate is fought in Japan. 1871, the National Association, the first professional baseball league, opens its first season in Fort Wayne, Indiana. 1886, the Haymarket Affair, bomb is thrown at policemen trying to break up a labor rally in Chicago. Kills 8 and wounds 60. The police fire into the crowd. 1904, the U.S. begins construction of the Panama Canal. If you've never seen it, it's a fascinating view. The problem is it's outdated. 1910, the Royal Canadian Navy is created. 1912, Italy occupies the Greek island of Rhodes. 1919, May 4th movement, student demonstrations take place in Tiananmen Square in Beijing, China. They are protesting the Treaty of Versailles, which transferred Chinese territory to Japan. 1926, the United Kingdom, general strike begins. 1927, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is incorporated. 1932, in Atlanta, mobster Al Capone begins serving an 11-year prison sentence for tax evasion. They couldn't get him for breaking the law, so they got him for tax evasion. 1942, World War II. The Battle of the Coral Sea begins with an attack by aircraft from the U.S. Aircraft carrier USS Yorktown on Japanese naval forces at Tulagi Island in the Solomons. The Japanese forces invaded Tulagi May 3rd. 1945, World War II. New Ngama concentration camp near Hamburg is liberated by the British Army. Also in 1945, the German surrender at Lüneburg Heath is signed, coming into effect the following day. It encompasses all Wehrmacht units in the Netherlands, Denmark, and Northwest Germany. 1946, San Francisco Bay, U.S. Marines from the nearby Treasure Island Naval Base stop a two-day riot in Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary. Five people are killed in the riot. 1949, the entire Torino football team, except for two players, didn't take the trip. Ciraro Toma, due to an injury, and Renato Gandolfi, because of the coach request, are killed in a plane crash. 1953, Ernest Hemingway wins the Pulitzer Prize for The Old Man and the Sea. 1959, the first annual Grammy Awards are held. 1961, American Civil Rights Movement, the Freedom Riders, began a bus trip through the South. 1961, Malcolm Ross and Victor Prather attained a new altitude record for manned balloon flight, ascending to the Stratolab 5 open gondola. They went up to 113,740 feet. 1970, Vietnam War, Kent State shootings. The Ohio National Guard sent to Kent State after disturbances in the city of Kent the week before, opened fire and killed four unarmed students, wounded nine others. The students were protesting the Cambodian campaign of the U.S. and South Vietnam. 1972, Don't Make a Wave Committee, a fledgling environmental organization founded in Canada in 1971, officially changes its name to Greenpeace Foundation. 1973, the 108-story Sears Tower Chicago is topped out at 1,451 feet as the world's tallest building. 1978, South African Defense Force attacks a Swapo base in Kasinga in southern Angola. They kill about 600 people. 1979, Margaret Thatcher becomes the first female prime minister of the UK. 1982, 20 sailors are killed when a British Type 42 destroyer HMS Sheffield is hit by an Argentinian Exocet missile during the Falklands War. 1988, the Pepcon disaster rocks Henderson, Nevada, as tons of space shuttle fuel detonate during a fire. 1989, Iran-Contra affair. Former White House aide Oliver North is convicted of three crimes and acquitted of nine others. The convictions are later overturned on appeal. 1990, Latvia declares independence from the Soviet Union. 1994, Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and PLO leader Yasser Arafat sign a peace accord, granting self-rule in the Gaza Strip and Jericho. 1998, a federal judge in Sacramento, California, gives Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski four life sentences plus 30 years after Kaczynski accepts a plea agreement sparing him from the death penalty. Year 2000, Ken Livingstone becomes the first mayor of London. That's an office separate from that of the Lord Mayor of London. 2007, Greensburg, Kansas is almost completely destroyed by a 1.7-mile-wide EF5 tornado. It was the first ever tornado to be rated as such with the new enhanced Fujita scale. And in 2014, three people are killed and 62 injured in a pair of bombings on buses in Nairobi, Kenya. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. And among the births was my own. Holidays observances. United Nations Anti-Bullying Day. U.S. Bird Day. Kasinga Day in Namibia. Christian Feast Day. Blessed Seferino Gomez Mala. Blessed Michael Giodoric. English Saints and Martyrs of the Reformation Era in the Church of England, F.C.D. Wanneken in the Lutheran Church, Florian Goddard of Hildesheim, Jose Maria Rubio, Judas Syriacus, Monica of Hippo, according to the 1960 Roman Catholic calendar, Sacerdos of Limoges, Venerius of Milan, Coal Miners Day in India, Dave Brubeck Day, Death of Milan Rastislav Stefanik Day in Slovakia, Greenery Day in Japan, International Firefighters Day, May 4th Movement Commemorations, Literary Day in the Republic of China, Youth Day in China, Remembrance Day for Martyrs and the Disabled in Afghanistan, Remembrance of the Dead in the Netherlands, Restoration of Independence Day in Latvia, Internationally, it is Star Wars Day. It's also World Give Day, World Naked Gardening Day. So strip off and run out there in the cold and garden. And in Fiji, it is Youth Day. Let's see what else we got. In 1303, Flemings conquer Middleburg. In the 1471 Battle of Tewkesbury, which took place in Gloucestershire, it's the final battle between the houses of Lancaster and York. Prince of Wales, Edward of Westminster, is killed. King Edward IV is restored to the throne. He restores political stability in England until he dies in 1483. 1535, five Carthusian monks from London Charterhouse Monastery are hung, drawn, and quartered in Tyburn in London for refusing to acknowledge Henry VIII as head of the Church of England. You do it my way or you die. Very succinct. 1540, Venice and Turkey signed the Treaty of Constantinople. 1634, Johann von Walbeck's fleet departs to the West Indies. 1652, Battle of Etampes. The French army under Turenne beat Florida Fronde rebels. 1747, Wilhelm IV appointed Viceroy of Over Asia, so. In 1783, William Herschel, the astronomer, reports seeing a red glow near the lunar crater of Aristarchus. There is activity on the moon. You can't deny it. 1805, Henry C. Overing buys 80 acres of Throg's Neck in the Bronx. 1814, the Bourbon Reign is restored in France. 1818, Netherlands and Britain sign a treaty against illegal slave handling. 1839, the Cunard Steamship Company is formed. 1843, Great Britain annexes Natal. 1846, Michigan ends the death penalty. 1847, New York State creates a Board of Commissioners of Immigration. Now their idea of controlling immigration is open a door and pretend not to see anything. 1858, the War of the Reform in Mexico. Liberals established their capital at Veracruz. 1861, at Gretna, Louisiana, one of the first guns of the Rebel Navy is cast. 1862, the Battle at Williamsburg in Virginia. 1862, at Yorktown, Virginia, McClellan halted his troop before the town as it's full of armed torpedoes left by Confederate Brigadier General Gabriel Rains. Even Lincoln said McClellan was the best trainer he'd ever seen, but giving him more troops was like shoveling flies across a room. 1863, Battle of Chancellorsville, accident at Salem Church, Union Army withdraws. This day in 1864, Grant's Union Army of the Potomac attacks Robert E. Lee's Confederates at the Rappahannock River. 1878, Thomas Edison's phonograph is shown for the first time at the Grand Opera House. 1893, cowboy Bill Pickett invents what's known as bulldogging. That's the skill of grabbing a cow by the horns and wrestling it to the ground. 1896, a grease fire ignites half a ton of dynamite at Cripple Creek, Colorado. 1897, a fire in the Paris Bazaar at Rue Jean Goujon kills 200. 1916, at the request of the U.S., Germany curtails its submarine warfare. 1917, a flotilla of U.S. destroyers arrive in Queenstown, Ireland to aid in convoying ships to England to protect them from the German U-boats. 1922, KNXAM in L.A., well, I love it when it just goes nuts. 1923, KNXAM in LA begins radio transmissions. 1923, there are bloody street battles between Nazis, socialists, and police in Vienna. 1923, New York State revokes the prohibition laws. 1924, the German Republic election. Fascist and communist win. 1925, the League of Nations has a conference on arms control and poison gas usage. 1927, the first balloon flight over 40,000 feet took place at Scott Field in Illinois. 1940, 21 not neutral Nazis and communists are arrested in the Netherlands. 1942, the Battle of the Coral Sea begins. It was the first naval battle fought solely in the air. It's between the Japanese, the U.S., and the Australian navies and air forces. 1942, food was first rationed in the U.S. 42, German occupiers imprisoned 450 prominent Dutch as hostages. 1945, German forces in Bavaria surrender unconditionally to American commander Jacob Devers. 1948, the Hague Court of Justice convicts Nazi SS officer in the Netherlands Hans Reuter of crimes against humanity. He's executed March 24, 1949. 1956, Queen Juliana unveils a national monument to dams in Amsterdam. 1957, Alan Freed hosted the Rock and Roll Show. It was the first primetime network rock show. 1957, the Anne Frank Foundation is formed in Amsterdam. She was a young Jewish girl who was was in hiding with her family. They were found by the Germans and killed. Her diary was published by her father after the war. Man, let's see if there's anything else worth mentioning. Okay, we shall move on to talking about the strange and the unusual. Well, that pretty much ends our history session. You know, we've been, I mentioned yesterday that my ultra-liberal wife wants me to mention tomorrow, no, I'm sorry, Thursday, the 6th, is Nurses Day. So do something nice for the nurse that gave you the COVID shot. Yet having been said, we've been talking about the paranormal, which is, you know, pretty one of the main topics on this particular show. You know, one of the most terrifying residents of White Rock Lake Park in Dallas, Texas, is a legendary goat man. According to the story, on a number of occasions in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, a very odd creature was seen wandering in and out of the trees after sunset. Those that claimed to have witnessed it all described it pretty much the same way. Man-like in form, about 7 feet high, goat-style protrusion sticking out of its head, and hooves instead of feet. And that description was like that of the fabled satyrs of Greek and Roman legend. And it has to be noted that numerous other creatures had an awareness of Must be noted that a number of other cultures had an awareness that such strange creatures are lurking among them. And this goes back millennia. For example, there's the demon goat man Azazel, the goat beast of the mountains that was feared by the herdsmen of Parnassus. And there was, of course, the most famous goat man of all, the Greek god Pan. Now, he was the deity of woods, fields, and the flocks and shepherds. And he dwelt in grottos, roamed the mountains and the valleys, was a lover of music, was universally feared by everybody. In ancient days, any form of overwhelming dread without a discernible cause was often described as ascribed to the actions and presence of Pan. It was called a panic attack. Now, Pan came to be considered a symbol of the universe and a personification of nature. It was almost certainly the inspiration for the Latin divinities, Sylvanus and Faunus. One fascinating account that was brought to my attention: young lady saw the goat man up close and personal in August of 2001 at White Rock Lake. Young lady been jogging around the lake on a 9-mile-long trail when at about 2 in the afternoon, out of the trees came the strangest-looking thing she'd ever seen. She described it as large, covered in thin, coarse brown hair with two large horn-like protrusions coming out of its head. He said this thing strode purposely in her direction with a malevolent, sneering grin on his face. Got to about 15 feet of where she was standing, frozen in terror, crouched down on all fours, and vanished in a flash of light. Now, she was positive she hadn't been hallucinating, was equally sure that such a thing couldn't live within the confines of White Rock Lake, or, frankly, any place else on the planet. Now, she made the comment that less than a minute before the goat man appeared, she was literally overcome by an intense feeling of fear, for no particular reason she could fathom. She's never suffered from panic attacks before or since, but figured this was probably the best way to describe how she felt at that point in time. Could also have been a classic description of an encounter with Pan, the god of the woods. Does Pan still live among us? Certainly possible. The next denizen of our cast of characters, is referred to as the Grinning Man. I found encounters between people, and the Grinning Man even happened on military bases. Now, this first story came from a young lady named Christine who grew up in West Texas, and on more than a few occasions was confronted by one of the weirdest and creepiest affiliate of the Men in Black mystery. None other than the Grinning Man himself. Now, she said she hadn't told a lot of people about it when she first saw this person. She thought she was about one or two. She had a very long memory. And it was like a typical thing that you hear. This man would stand in the doorway of her bedroom and just grin at her. She remembers standing up in her crib and holding onto the bars. She described him as wearing a fedora, a tan raincoat, and black trousers, shiny shoes, black leather gloves. Now, she said his face wasn't like somebody who'd been burned. He just stood there and would grin. Now, this was not a friendly grin by any means. It was described as horrible, emotionless. And he appeared off and on to her for a few years. Even if she got older and slept in her own bed, she'd wake up sometimes, usually about 3 a.m, and she'd be laying there, and suddenly she'd be wide awake for no apparent reason. But when she'd wake up, there he'd be standing, grinning at her. She didn't have any kind of frame of reference for this appearance. And of course, her parents wouldn't believe her. She thought it was just, she's making it up. But there were all sorts of strange paranormal things that happened to her throughout her childhood. And she wondered if it was all part of the same thing. As a teenager, she even got weird phone calls. The phone would ring and it sounded like a little kid speaking in another language, just rapidly talking into the phone. And she thought at the time it was some little kid who got on a payphone and started dialing numbers from another country. And that's when she read John Keel's The Mothman Prophecies. It was the same thing he described. What kind of validated the fact this entity was real was that when she was 12, a friend and she were out riding their bikes about 9:30 at night. It was summertime. It was a small town in West Texas. And they stopped and looking in the doors of the Baptist church. Yeah, just put in new carpet, which was a big thing, especially for a Saturday night. But they both turned at the same time and looked behind them, and this man appeared like at the edge of the street, started walking toward them, wearing the same exact outfit she described, the fedora, the tan overcoat, the black pants. But this time his whole head and hands were bandaged. The two didn't speak. They just took off like a shot around the corner, went to her friend's house. They didn't quite... Yeah, it's interesting. I get 3 or 4 calls a day wanting to talk about the extended warranty on my car. Well, when Christine got into her early 20s, she was living in Dallas. And she met a young lady. They got to be friends. They got to talking about the paranormal. She lived in Lufkin in East Texas. And she said she and her sister shared a room. And sometimes she'd wake up and there'd be this man standing in the room. Wore a hat and a long coat. Reminded her of McDonald's Hamburglar. And he'd just stand there grinning at her. One night she woke up and he was looking at her. But he was petting her sister's head while she slept. And in a few years later, Christine had another friend who'd grown up in New York. She talked about seeing a similar man that would stand in her room. And Christine, of course, thought to herself, I mean, this is wonderful. I'm absolutely not crazy. She said, I had lights that would turn on and off. My stuff got moved around all the time. In fact, she said her stuff still gets moved around in the middle of the night. She had a poster of Marilyn Monroe jump off her wall. It was like 6 o'clock, and she was 16 years old. Just flew off the wall and into the middle of the floor. Now, she said she grew up in a really religious family, Southern Baptist, don't you know? And there's all something to do with the devil, although she didn't She'd, at least according to the teachings of her church. Now, Southern Baptists are so conservative that two Baptists would not make love standing up because folks might think they're dancing. There was another visible entity that used to show up. It was black, shapeless, but had enormous eyes, kind of like the quintessential way we depict aliens. Now, these big eyes were silvery with no pupil, had a reflective quality. It'd be 3 in the morning, and she'd feel her bed jolt, and she'd look down, and there'd be these eyes looking right at her over the edge of her bed. She'd turn on the light once she got her courage up. She said, if I don't move, it's going to kill me, and if I do move, it's going to kill me, so what the heck? She's 16 or 17, and she screamed for her mother, told her she had a nightmare, but then she saw it again one morning. She's getting ready to go to school, and she turned toward the shower, and she could see those eyes looking between the hooks on the shower curtain. Well, the final time this thing ever appeared, she didn't see it. She had a friend sleeping over. They were seniors in high school. She had never been to Christine's house, and she had never told about any of this stuff. But this was a very religious girl. Didn't believe in any of this, or would have said it was the devil. They woke up in the morning. She was helping me make my bed, and I said, it's a lot of fun. You should come back over again. And her friend looked at her and said, I'm sorry. I'm not going to come back here ever again. And Christine said, what did I do? And she said, you didn't do anything. How do you not remember? She said, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, the friend said she woke up in the middle of the night and thought she couldn't see. You know, when her eyes adjusted, there was a face so close to her she couldn't see anything else. She asked her what the face looked like. She said the same thing, big eyes and black. She said she screamed so loud she must woke up the whole neighborhood. According to her, all Christine did was sit up on her elbow, look at her, and say, are you okay? She said she was and went back to sleep. Now, her mother, just down the hall, didn't hear it either. But the girl never came back to visit Christine. She did have a person who would actually call her and talk to her while she was in high school. Now, it may have just been a nut. We've all had that happen. But this individual seemed to know everywhere she went. She took dance classes in Abilene, had friends that lived there as well. This person would call late at night and ask, how was your dance class? He seemed to know her every move, which was very strange. This individual who'd call wouldn't identify themselves, and they knew a week's worth of her activities, and she might have decided to go see a friend and not had those plans before she went, but in that case, nobody would know where she was going, but this person knew where she'd been. Last time she saw him was in a dream when she was 13, and it was a lucid dream. We've all had them. She was in a store looking at a rack of magazines, turned to her left, and there he was. He's got a magazine in his hand, and staring right at her and grinning. In the dream, she put her magazine down, walked past him, and said, don't ever come here again, and he never did. And that was the last time she saw him, physically or in a dream. She apparently decided enough was enough. She knew that when she does think about him, it does spur activity in her house. When she looked into it again, or she doesn't know how much of what happens comes from energy she's putting out. She's never had any sightings of UFOs or anything like that. She did say one thing. She was driving home from Abilene one night, and there's an Air Force base in Abilene. There was apparently an aircraft. Didn't have any lights on it, but it left a green glowing vapor behind it. And it was traveling really, really fast. And nobody else seemed to see it but her. Well, you know, over the years, I spent a lot of time reading about Bigfoot and Men in Black and the Chupacabra. In fact, I used to talk at Roswell till I became politically unacceptable since I outsold Don Smith 4-1. But I've heard a lot of stories about other types of creatures. Now, the story I'm going to tell you came from central England. The village of Pelsall, and the origins of that hark back in time to the 10th century. Now, barely a stone's throw from Pelsall is the village of Great Rierley, And on the surface, there's nothing odd or disturbing about the place, at least not until you dig into its history. And then you find the great Whirly has a dark shadow that hangs over it. It's been there for quite some time. In late 1903, a resident of the Great Whirly, a young man named George Dalgy, was sentenced to serve significant jail time for violently attacking horses in the area. And these late-night attacks were so vicious and ferocious and deadly that the entire populace of Great Whirly was shocked to its collective core. Both the local and the national media at the time covered the killings and reported extensively on Adalji's sentence. But you have to ask yourself, was he really guilty of the crimes that were attributed to him? Somebody who suspected that there had been a major miscarriage of justice in the Adalji affair was none other than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of the fictional consulting detective, Sherlock Holmes. When I was in England, I went to 221B Baker Street. It was a bank. And they got so many letters addressed to Sherlock Holmes that they had a secretary whose full-time job was answering those letters on Sherlock Holmes' letterhead, which I found fascinating. Such was the extent to which Conan Doyle tackled the Adalji case that that seven-year sentence that Adalji got was cut and he walked out of prison in 1906. And he was a free man at that point, though he was not a pardoned man. The local police remained convinced that Adalji was the guilty party, regardless of what Sir Arthur Conan Doyle may have thought. Now, some might say that the strange saga of George Adalji was nothing more than a case of some deranged individual, whether it was Adalji or maybe a local butcher's boy named Royden Sharp or somebody else whose identity has never been ascertained, performing terrible acts that warranted incarceration. And of course, no one would have a problem with placing such a person behind bars, and for a very long time. But you have to ask yourself, was the culprit really George Adalji? There were a number of valid reasons to why Adalji may not have been the guilty party. Born in 1876 to a mother of Scottish descent and a father who was from Bombay, India, George, along with the rest of his family, suffered from racist taunts, some of which came from the local police. Indeed, the chief constable to Staffordshire Police loudly and outrageously proclaimed black men were less than beast. Now, I personally have never understood what the problem is with race. Everybody bleeds the same. Locals viewed the family with suspicion. Anonymous threatening letters were sent to the Adalji home, and a campaign of intimidation and terror continued for years. And it culminated with George Adalji's arrest and conviction for horse maiming. That's until Arthur Conan Doyle got involved in the mystery and Adalji became a free man. Now, those who live in that area had heard the tales of the animal mutilation and of the Conan Doyle connection and of the menace that the entire affair created in and around Great Whirly back at the turn of the 20th century. But with a growing interest in matters relative to the domains of the mysterious, the supernatural, and the occult, it became clear to open-minded investigators that there were some aspects to the controversy that pushed things down a very strange pathway, possibly even supernatural pathways. Now, there was talk, hushed to be sure, of the unfortunate horses being sacrificed to appease ancient, terrible supernatural entities. And one of the strangest of all these stories suggested the culprit was a large and monstrous ape, who apparently went on to be elected to Parliament. Now, this was intriguing since Staffordshire has a long controversial history with out-of-place apes and British Bigfoot. Similar story in circulation also suggested well-trained and aggressive boars were responsible. They were also elected to Parliament. Large and violent birds of an unknown kind, possibly what today we might call the Mothman, and even a wild marauding cat was suggested. Now, in terms of the cat, we're talking about an ocelot, which is known as the dwarf leopard and exists in South America, Central America, and Mexico. And it just so happens that this particular creature was a very real one. It was owned by a man named Dr. John Kerr Butter.
And he lived not all that far from where the attacks occurred at the time of Badalji's arrest. Butler was retained by the police to check for any incriminating horsehairs on Badalji's clothing. Now, whispers suggested it was Butter's ocelot, and he owned several over the years, that was the real cause of the horse attacks, not Badalji at all. Then there were other whispers suggested Butter might well have had a vested interest in placing the blame on Badalji, specifically direct people away from himself and his wild cat. Whatever the truth might have been, Butter's ocelot vanished under hard circumstances, although a second is rumored to have had come into his hands a few years later. Well, we turn from England to Lee County, South Carolina. It's the summer of 1988, and a terrifying creature began haunting the woods in the little towns of Lee County, and specifically the Scape Ore Swamp area. This creature became known as Lizard Man as a result of its alleged green and scaly body. For all intents and purposes, it was a case of the creature from the Black Lagoon come to life. A bipedal lizard roaming the neighborhood. Could be. On the other hand, research undertaken years later suggested Lizard Man was something far more akin to Bigfoot. Yeah, we'll talk more about Bigfoot. But first, let's talk about the supposed Lizard Man. It all began, publicly if not chronologically, July 14, 1988, when the Way family phoned the Lee County Sheriff's Office and made a very strange and disturbing claim. It seems that something wild and animalistic had attacked their 1985 Ford. Apparently didn't like Fords. Looked as if something large, powerful, and deeply savage had viciously clawed, maybe even bitten, the body of the vehicle. Particularly the hood. Well, the police came out and responded to the call, and they were baffled, of course. And sure enough, the Ways were right on target. Their vehicle was battered and bruised in the extreme, in addition to footprints across the muddy area. It was time to bring in Sheriff Liston Truesdale. Now, there was a probability that the prints were those of a fox. Larger prints were suspected of being those of a bear, although some observers suggested they had certain human qualities to them. Such a close-knit neighborhood didn't take long for news to get around, and numerous locals turned up to see what all the fuss was about. Now, it is notable that Sheriff Truesdale told Bigfoot investigator Lyle Blackburn, who wrote the definitive book on the affair, titled, of course, Lizard Man, that while we were there looking over the situation, we learned that people in the Brown Town community had been seeing a strange creature about 7 feet tall with red eyes. Some of them said it was green, and some of them said it was brown. They all thought it might be responsible for what had happened to the Ford. Well, that was enough to create a mystery and a monster and turn it loose on society. Okay, it seems that everybody I know is calling to tell me happy birthday. Well, we were talking about the Lizard Man. The publicity afforded the Way incident prompted somebody who became the key player in that matter to come forward. His name was Chris Davis. He was 17 at the time. Chris's father, Tommy, had seen the sensationalized coverage given by the media to the attack on the Hayes vehicle and contacted the sheriff. Tommy took his son to tell the police what he had told him, and it was actually quite an interesting story. Back in 1988, Chris was working in a local McDonald's, and on the night of June 29th, about 2 weeks before the Way incident blew up, Chris was on the late shift, which meant he didn't finish work until after 2 in the morning. His journey home ensured he had to take a road across the swamp, specifically a heavily forested part of the swamp. Just minutes later, he had a blowout. He pulled up at a crossroads and, in the bright moonlight, changed the tire. As he got the job finished, put the tools back into the trunk, he saw something walk out of the trees, large, human-like in shape, and possessing 2 glowing red eyes and 3 fingers on each hand. All in all, it was described as being quite horrifying. Chris panicked, jumped in his car, and took off. Now, based on what Chris had to say after that, this was probably a wise move. He said he looked back and saw something running across the field toward him, about 25 yards away, and he saw these red glowing eyes. He jumped in the car, and as he locked it, the thing grabbed the door handle. And he could see it from the neck down. Three big fingers, long black nails, green rough skin. And it was PO'd. He looked in his mirror and saw a blur of green running. And he could see his toes, and then he jumped on the roof of the car. Thought he heard a grunt, and then he could see the fingers through the front windshield where they curled around on the roof. So he floored it and swerved to shake the creature off. Well, the reports didn't end there. Sheriff Truesdale got more and more reports to the extent that a near X-Files-style dossier was compiled. It was an official police dossier that contained a fascinating account of Johnny Brithers, who, July 31st, 1990, described for the Sheriff's Department what happened to him the night before. He said, last night about 10:30, we were coming home from the Browntown section of Lee County. Is me, my mother, Bertha Mae Blither, don't you know, two sisters. He said, I started talking about the time we passed the flowing well in Scape Oral Swamp, and I said there ain't no such thing as a lizard. If there was, somebody'd be seeing it or would have caught it by now. Well, they got up about a mile or mile and a half past the Butterbean Shed, about 50 feet from the dirt road, right by these two signs. His mother was driving the car. It was on the right side. It came out of the bushes. It jumped out in the road. My mother swerved to miss it, smashed the brakes, and sped up. It jumped out of the bushes like it's going to jump on the car. And when his mother put on the brakes, it looked like it wanted to get in the car. Well, Johnny's mother, Bertha Mae, was interviewed, gave her own statement about what happened. She said, this past Monday night, I went to my mother's house in Browntown to pick up my son. Went to McDonald's on Highway 15 near Bishopville to get something to eat. Left about 20 minutes after 10 in the evening, and we headed home and came through Browntown and Scrape Oar Swamp. Passed the bridge and was down the road near a mile. I was looking straight up ahead, going about 25, and I saw this big brown thing. It jumped up at the window. Well, I sped up and went on the other side of the road to keep him from dragging my 11-year-old girl out of the car. I didn't see with my lights directly on, and it scared me to death. And then there's the statement of Tamasia Blithers, Bertha's daughter. She said it was tall, taller than a car, brown-looking, a big chest, big eyes, two arms. I don't know how his face looked. First seen his eyes. Never seen anything like it before. Didn't see a tail. Mother said if she hadn't whipped over, he would have hit her car or jumped on it. Mother said she was so scared her body light, and she held her heart all the way home. In addition, Lyle Brightburn had uncovered other reports of the creature, dating from 1986 to well into the 2000s. Now, two of the key players in this saga are now dead, Johnny Blithers and Chris Davis. Johnny died in a car accident in 1999, and Chris Davis died from a shotgun blast. Result of a drug deal gone bad, don't you know? Almost a decade to the day after Blithers' death. As for the legendary Lizard Man, what exactly was it? Certainly the name provoked imagery of a malevolent, scaly green monster. On the other hand, let's not forget there were references to the creature having a brown color. All of which leads us to Lyle Blackburn's conclusions. Now Blackburn, unlike most Ivory Tower writers, undertook a personal on-site investigation with his colleague Cindy Lee. Studied all the evidence in an unbiased fashion. And Blackburn noted that despite the undeniable and memorable name, the various descriptions of the creatures being brown in color simply didn't accord with anything of a reptilian nature. Blackburn suggests if a Bigfoot dwelled in a watery bottomland where it might become covered in rich algae-rich mud or moss, that would explain the green, wet-like appearance. Doesn't explain the three fingers, though, but greenish mud, which had dried and cracked, would certainly give a scaly appearance. Well, it's been considered to be a good theory. Far more likely than a huge bipedal lizard roaming around the swamps of South Carolina. Well, let's talk about Mulpingare. Terrifying man-beast has had a particular penchant for ripping out the tongues of cattle. Now, the Mulpingare is a violent thing that haunts the Mato Grosso, a huge Brazilian state, the name of which translates into English as thick bushes, which is dominated by plains, plateaus, rainforest. Ideal location in which a hairy man-beast just might hide and thrive. It's also supposed to be the location of several lost and forgotten cities. Now, Randy Merrill, who studied the history of the Mulpingare, says that according to local native legends, the Mulpingare is a prehistoric cryptid that reportedly lived and still lives in the Amazon rainforest of South America, particularly in Brazil and Patagonia. Consistently described as having red hair, long arms, powerful claws that could tear apart palm trees, sloping back, crocodile-like hide that arrows and bullets couldn't penetrate, second mouth on its belly and backward feet, which is supposedly responsible for the bottle-shaped footprints. Now, it's said to stand up to 6 feet tall when it assumed a bear-like stance on its hind legs, which it did when it smelled a nearby human. Also gave off a putrid, disorienting stench, emitted a frightening shriek, and could move slowly and stealthily through the forest, often surprising unsuspecting locals. Although it was believed to be carnivorous, by all accounts it didn't eat humans. Frankly, it was said to sometimes speak and to enjoy punishing hunters who violated religious holidays. Certain lore even seemed to link it with the South American werewolf. Now, the more werewolf-like version of the creature is called the wolf's cape and is thought to have originally been human. Now, the late and renowned Dr. Bernard Heuvelmans was bringing much of the story of the Mulpingare to the attention of the media, the public, and the Bigfoot hunting community. One story that really stood out in the menacing stakes occurred decades ago and involves a man identified as Inocencio, an explorer taking part in an expedition on the Urubu River. Reportedly, Inocencio and his team were in hot pursuit of what was described as a group of mysterious black monkeys they intended bagging and taking back to civilization. Unfortunately for the would-be monkey hunters, it didn't quite work out as planned. One particular night, when the sun was gone and the area was bathed in darkness, something vile and marauding put in an appearance. And it was an appearance accompanied by something hair-raising, what sounded like the panic-filled cries of a man echoing around the dense jungle environment. And then something even worse happened. Inocencio's ears were filled with the sound of heavy feet resonating loudly on the forest floor. And there was no doubt in his mind what was going on. Some huge, lumbering, bipedal thing was racing toward him. Now, this wasn't good news. Not at all. Suddenly, the loud footsteps were replaced by something else. Silence. To Inocencio's horror, he could see something large, black, and man-like lurking in the shadows, possibly waiting for the right time to launch an all-out attack. And Inocencio was frozen to the spot, fearful of what might happen next. And just as the suspense got to levels considered unbearable, the creature let loose with an almighty ear-splitting roar. Well, acting on instinct more than anything else, Inocencio fired his rifle in the direction of the creature, which only pissed it off as it hurtled toward him. Fortunately, another bullet deterred the Mulpingare from coming any closer, and it vanished into the undergrowth. Well, showing a high degree of common sense, Inocencio spent the rest of the night perched in a tree, kept awake by the hideous, malevolent roaring of this unknown creature. When morning came and he finally got up the courage to climb down the tree, the only evidence of what had happened the night before were splashes of blood on the ground and a strong, sour odor that filled the air. The creature he had shot was never identified. Now, interestingly enough, local folklore suggests the Mulpingare has the ability to make a person disoriented, induce a nauseous sense of vertigo, and even to instill unconsciousness in a person. I know professors that can do that. This may not even be mere myth and legend. It's entirely possible that potentially, like its American cousin, Bigfoot the Mapungari has the ability to disable people via the manipulation of infrasound. Although a lot of researchers of the worldwide man-beast mystery take the view that the Mapungari may be some form of unknown ape or even an ape man, there's another popular theory to explain the existence and presence of the creature in the Mato Grosso. Ornithologist who's extensively traveled and on the Amazon, David Oren, believes that the Mapungari may not be unknown man-beast after all, but surviving pockets of massive creatures that are supposed to have become extinct thousands of years ago. He's talking specifically about the giant sloth, possibly Mylodons, which could reach heights of about 9 feet and weigh in at a hefty 500 pounds. Now, the first rumors that a giant sloth, ground sloth species, may still exist reach Europe in the 16th century. Sailors brought home stories of water tigers backed up by fossil bones. In 1789, Dr. Bartolomé de Munoz found megatherium bones near what's now Buenos Aires. He gave them to the King of Spain, prompting the king to order a complete specimen of the animal, alive or dead. Rumors gained more credence in the late 19th century. Future governor of Santa Cruz province in southern Patagonia, Ramon Lista, was riding in Santa Cruz in the late 1880s when a shaggy red-haired beast resembling what he called a giant pangolin trotted across his path. Craig Woolheater runs the hugely popular website Cryptomundo, which is dedicated to the world of unknown animals. October 2005, he said, several years back in August of 1999, I ran across a very interesting article in Discover magazine. It chronicled an ornithologist named David Oren's treks into the Amazon in search of the Mapungari, which is thought to be the still-living giant ground sloth. In the article, Woolheater quoted the following from the Discover article. Oren's gathered a certain amount of derision from the scientific community over the last few years because of his determination to keep tramping through the jungle in search of the giant ground sloth. His detractors suspect he's as likely to find the beast as other adventurers are to find Bigfoot. Now, Woolheater said, I felt this article had many parallels to Bigfoot research. The Mapungari is known to the locals, much as the anecdotal evidence we're collecting regarding sightings of Bigfoot in our country. Now, as Woolheater noted in his article, that people think every inch of the planet's been explored, but quite the contrary. There are large areas that modern man has never set foot in. Well, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk more about strange creatures in the paranormal. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great day.